Each and every educator understands what CBTD how that will impact on their professional growth. Therefore, it will be difficult for us to implement the CPTD. That advocacy estimates 2 million. Then coming to the implementation, we estimate 3 million for the coming financial year, which will, at least it won't be a full year, because the year will be shared between the pilot and the implementation and the advocacy at the same time. The next detail is in terms of our communication and advocacy, which I think is short and to the point there, that we have to reclaim our name, and we divided it accordingly, as you can see there. In terms of registration, one issue that we want to introduce now is online registration. We have to move with the trends. We, in terms of paperwork, it has been working very well, but we believe we need to move, because sometimes you find that the teacher is verified and needs the registration certificate at the same time. That person needs to take a train to come to Centurion and take that person 2 days coming in and 2 days going back. Sometimes they find that they have lost those opportunities. So we need to move towards the online registration, which we estimate 350,000. In terms of updating the register, we estimated 250,000. What we mean here is that most of the information which our educators give us some years back, and some of them are no longer in the profession, we need to clean that database on a continuous basis to ensure that the members who are there or the information which we have is current and reliable. In terms of moving forward, we have to introduce these different categories of certification, which means we don't want to move away from a letter which says that we register this person provisionally or conditionally. But it should be a normal formal certificate, which will be done in such a way that it won't be easy to forge it. And again, we have to embark on the pre-registration of students. Our final year students, to make it easier for them so that when come January, February, they don't get stranded, we have to ensure that we reach them during the course of them before they write their examinations, to ensure that we pre-register them, so that by the time they get their certificates or diplomas, somewhere in May, April, when they graduate, they were not disadvantaged of any possible job opportunities, because they don't have such, they don't have state registration. So we estimated 200,000 to do that. In terms of code of ethics, I think it's Mr. Dove has explained a lot about it. We have divided 1.2 million accordingly there. Then coming to the building reserve fund. Here, as I've indicated, the revenue has to be spread over 2 financial years. The actual revenue cost will be determined via bidding processes. The occupation is estimated to take place somewhere towards the end of 2011. And in the first half of 2010, we're thinking of, we're planning, we're busy working on the bid documentation now. We have to advertise those bids during the first half of 2010. And we believe that the reason being have to start before the end of the financial year, 2010 financial year. Work in progress. I think we've tied on piloting the CPTD. That's work in progress. It started in this financial year where we are. And then what we are doing is what we have indicated in tightening with the provincial offices. And we are preparing the bid. As I've indicated, advocacy campaigns are on as well. And we are busy trying to improve our database. I think for today we end there. Thanks.
Thank you. I must tell you that I've been in meetings all morning, and I set me for 1 minute, 2 minute break before we start the interactive session. So members, if you don't mind, let's take a 2 minute leg stretch, and then we'll start. Literally, it's 3 o'clock. up now. We come back at 5 past. I think there's still some tea and things outside.
Teacher development.
to just respond on the code of ethics thing, because we're going to have a substantive discussion on all of these aspects, okay? Ms. Dudley?
Okay, sorry, I came in a few minutes late, so I was going to speak around promoting and enhancing the image of the profession. I'll do that now. My question. No, well, I suppose it comes into it, but no. There were three bullet points. Okay. Well, the one bullet point under professional development, was under professional development the whole way.
Good. You want to just respond to those issues around the code of ethics, beginning with the first question?
Did anyone start? I'll
end
up quickly.
And let Percy answer so we can have more discussion, right?
Thanks, Shan. Because of the time, well, I've been told I can answer the easy ones, so I'm just going for the easy ones. The provinces that we're piloting at, is not the lesser ones, but provinces.
I ask you to respond to the code of ethics.
Oh, okay. I think one thing that we need to do, maybe the CEO will have to put our answer from council on writing around professionalism versus the strike, because we've taken a particular stance to say, as says, we have the professional standing, we understand that, and we look at it. But coming to the striking of educators, the labor issue that the ELRC and the department and the different stakeholders have to look at, and we do not want to cloud the two issues where we impact on the right of educators to strike. Whilst we are fully guiding on how teachers behave when they are on strike, that part stays on the professionalism part of it. But I think our council, the last council, took a very good resolution. We'll provide the resolution in writing to the committee so that we can have that in writing. And then the nature of cases. I think one of the key things that we can do definitely is to provide the handbook that we have currently, which is a poster form to the committee. And then as soon as we streamline and we have it in booklets, we'll be able to forward that to the committee as well. Nature of cases, streamlining and overlapping. I think one thing we need to make clear, and I think when Temba takes more, we'll give more clarity, all cases are to come to face. There is no particular case that is not supposed to come to face. And all departments, what has been overlapping is that the departments have the understanding that they want to go through the case first, whether it takes them a year. When they have concluded the case, they forward the information to SAFE. By the time we have to do the case, we redo the information. We go and get the investigation. We do redo the case to the extent that educators feel that we are punishing them twice because already they have been punished. So what we are doing when we are visiting now the 9 provinces to say to the Labor Department, when you get the investigation, let us do it concurrently so that by the time we deal with the educator, it's done once and for all. It comes to the same question that says, what happens when the educator resigns in the process of being prosecuted? As says, we follow up. The department might not be able to do that, the person is out. But as says, we ensure, let's take a case, Philadelphia school. The teachers have slept with children. When they are found guilty, we ensure they don't teach in the country anymore. So whether they have resigned, we continue with the case, we struck them off the roll, because as you said, honorable member, is that what they do, sometimes they go and teach in independent schools or governing body posts. And then they're still within the teaching fraternity. So one of the reasons we had this discussion to say, let's have a database where employers can be able to access the teacher's record. It's for us to ensure that even if you're gone, you've resigned, you're teaching somewhere else, it will be on the system of SAFE. They can put on the ID number, and the information will show that you have been struck off the roll and you are not eligible to teach anywhere in the country. I'll keep to those and then Temba can follow.
Thanks, Siri. Yeah, when people resign, they haven't got away. The council is very, very vigilant now. And even we cannot get the people after reasonable measures have been taken. We have the hearings in absentia, and we have struck people off the roll who refuse to come to say. So they are deregistered. The question of advocacy regarding ethics is critical because we've been now offering, in this new way of seeing SAIS, to the Departments of Education Chair, for the departments to request to us and go to address constituencies, areas, where there seems to be some kind of dysfunctionality that the department can't really do much about because there's nothing specific going on there. You know, there's a rumor that teachers leave school on Fridays at half a day, teachers are having girlfriends, teachers are drinking with students. Now, the department cannot do much if it does not have specific evidence and something to go by. But say scan, and we have been going to areas where we call schools together in clusters, and we're going to accelerate that, and preach to them the gospel of professionalism. That's our role. So in terms of advocacy, you know, we want to move more towards doing those kinds of things, so that some of the places where our learners, young learners, for example, I got a call a few days ago, 13, 14, 15, are being exploited, and everybody seems to be turning a blind eye. You know, there's nobody that is even complaining there. But we do know in that area that these learners are being exploited by adults. Many of them are teachers as well. But the complaints don't come to us. So SAFE is trying to do these kind of more creative things in going over there, making a presence, lecturing the communities, trying to put parents on the guard, saying to the parents what is a role that they could be playing, and even trying to influence them not to easily give in to the power of these girls being bought, and their poverty is really exploited.
When you register teachers at that point, do they have to sign a copy of the Code of Ethics? Is there some correlation with the actual registration and the Code of Ethics? I'm trying to just understand how this process works, because over and above the fact that you're publishing all these number of booklets that you're going to distribute and so on, is there that link?
Absolutely. It's there. There's a commitment made to abide by the Code of Ethics. I think what we need to do, Temba, is when we're sending the handbook, the Code of Ethics, I think we need to also send Portfolio Committee a copy of the application form. You know, this was one of the early decisions of the council, and it was a good one, where each teacher must sign an application form. It was very cumbersome. You know, the previous teachers' council, if one can actually call it that, used to automatically register teachers. You know, the government just used to give you a list of teachers, and they were all on your base. But this is a conscious decision by teachers. So they sign and they pay so they know what they're in for. It's there.
Can I also just request that one of the things that I know we did when we dealt with the sexual offences legislation is we established a register of sexual offences. And one of the specific requirements for that had to be complied with by not offenders or anybody else, but employers who employ people in areas that are specifically related to services to children, and teaching would be one of those, that they are meant to get a clearance certificate from the registrar, who is, I think it's the DG of Justice, before anybody can employ, whether it's a nanny, a nursery school, even a hospital in a pediatric ward, is unable to employ anybody to work with children unless there is a clearance certificate against a particular applicant's name. Now, it seems to me that the issue of the registration of teachers, given that you've got this backlog that you're trying to work through and so on, it's very opportune for you to assess in terms of your registry. It might pull your processes back a bit, but it might be a very good way for you to synergize against those registers, because you may find, and particularly what we found when we dealt with the sexual offences registers, that when it comes to paedophilia and other kinds of really horrendous activities, that people usually have a history. So assuming that you have a situation in a school, you would find that that person has probably been convicted outside of the schooling environment on a previous charge and so on. So I think that there's room there and scope for a degree of synergy already at the registration process for you to do that. I know that when it comes to schools and principals, that's probably going to take an even longer period for them to get into the rhythm of checking with the registrar and so on. And in fact, it is illegal, and I believe that there is a sanction in the legislation for people who don't 2 years ago, I'd asked already whether in fact it was up and running, and I was told that it was. They were in the process at that stage of getting records from the prisons of people who are already serving time, because what we had said was that it needed to apply retrospectively as well, because it doesn't help to only say new people who are convicted, and then given the fact that this is a pattern of behavior as well. So it's just something that perhaps you should consider, and perhaps just liaise with the relevant justice officials, and if you need names and numbers, please let me know and I'll get those things for you. Okay, let us go into teacher development. I know Ms. Gina and Ms. Sorry, you wanted to add?
Thank you, President. I wanted to know, when they register, registration of educators, do we have contract registration and contract basis? I'm just thinking of the foreigners who come here for a certain period, and then they have to leave, or once you're registered, you have liberty to move the way you can. Just addressing on the foreign educators that come to the country.
No, thanks, Chair. We have different categories of registration in relation to foreigners, for in particular. We provide them with provisional registration, which is, I think, the 12-month kind of contract, which is renewable, actually. And that's how we're putting tests there, that at least we don't give a lifetime kind of registration. Because one of the things that we picked up was some people make the country a transit to other places, you know? They may come in just to get the registration certificate from SAIS and go over to Canada. But then we limit them to a 12-month kind of period, and people will then renew as they continuously stay in the country and teach in the country. Thanks.
Just a follow-up on that, Jay. How many teachers in South Africa are registered at this stage, and how many teachers is in South Africa?
Well, let's do this. Let's take a round about registration, because now we've moved into registration. I can't keep control over this committee. It's terrible. When we spoke last, you did explain to us that there was this backlog in terms of registration and so on. Am I correct to understand that the targets that you set for this coming year, this current financial year, in other words, of what are the 24,700, whatever. Whether that would now mean that the only outstanding registrations would be people coming newly into the profession once you've captured those. Okay. So once we do that, then we're in a different ball game altogether, because the issues that you raise about teachers and teacher qualification and so on and so on, we can start addressing those issues. Am I correct? Because now you've got your cohort, so to speak, and now you should know, as far as that database is concerned, who is, who isn't qualified, to what extent, and so on. It's that other database that can now be filled up. And that the long-term strategy, as I understand it, terms of developing a professional cohort of people, would be that the new groups would all now have been sufficiently qualified or qualified to a certain level. So we don't have people who don't have matric or who have only matric who are teachers. We're dealing with a legacy of the past at the moment. So that's the one feature that hopefully we will start working through. You will know and identify those people who would need teacher development and other kinds of things that may be identified. Am I correct to say that that's where we will find ourselves?
Sure, I think that's where we want to go to. That's our vision, actually. But we have the situation where, like, when you interact with provinces like Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, provinces that would clearly indicate to you that sometimes situations forces them to employ your grade 12 learners, you know, people with standard 10, because there's no availability of teachers at that time to ensure that at least learners have somebody have registered all teachers.
But explain that part to me now. You see, because you start off by saying that no teacher can be employed as a teacher without certification. Right? So I'm assuming you've got to a point now where you've done your backlog, your 24,000 odd people. Now, as part of that 24,000, you would have dealt with those legacy issues, am I correct? Those legacy issues where people really needed to have people come on board as soon as possible and so on. Once you've got your cohort registered, part of that, of course, you'll try and ensure that there's development to a certain point, and that basically the whole mandate of SAIS is to ensure that there's a professional cohort of people in this country that we call teachers in our schools. Okay? So you can't have somebody who is a matric student coming out of matric having been employed as a teacher regarding that person as a fully qualified teacher. You can't have that situation anymore once you've registered that 24,000, whatever. Once you have that situation, you're now in a situation where you say, well, the rules now apply equally to everybody. If there's a school somewhere in Kukunap or whatever, Pitsonarvater, where you have somebody employed as a teacher, that person cannot necessarily be on the payroll. Why? Because that person is not registered with SAIS. SAIS should not register such a person because that person is not a professional teacher. Am I correct to assume that? And that you would have certain requirements, and maybe you'll even have a separate category of temporary teacher or training teacher or teacher not yet qualified, whatever that category is, where you will start registering that person, being able to monitor and give certain time frames within which certain qualifications, certain milestones would have to be achieved for that person to be fully registered. So that's what I'm trying to establish, so that there's some control over this particular phenomenon that we all are hassling with, basically.
Okay, your understanding is correct. It's correct. That's where we're heading for. Currently, we do have categories. There are those who give full registration, those who qualify without any question. Then you do find, like you go to the technical colleges, or those which were the former technical colleges, you find a motor mechanic who's teaching because it's a special scheme. We give them conditional registration. We attach him to that particular institution, which means that school needed that person for that particular job only. So those who give them 12 months renewable. Still, if we find a situation whereby a certain area is forced to take a matric person, even another person who has got BCom but does not have a teaching method, we register them conditionally, on the condition that they have to write the recommendation to us and explain that they can't find a suitable person, and they believe they've undergone a certain check with this person that can assist in the meantime, we give conditional. So our register has got all these classes to manage those who are unqualified and those who are underqualified and our fully qualified educators. So the concept which we have, that's how we are managing it. It's only that nowadays, recently, this phenomenon has indicated, it's coming a lot where a lot of unqualified people are coming back to the teaching, like in KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape. So whereby then the question is, it goes back to the supply and demand, whereby we have to use these tests ourselves to advise, to say, the supply and demand seems to be giving problems in this province.
Look, my issue is really ultimately, as much as there is this, and we will engage about the supply and demand just now, and maybe we should go into that, and maybe what you should be doing is to tell us a little bit about what that means for the system as a whole in terms of your research and what your findings are. Because given the, 20,000, if we're short of 20,000 teachers, that's a whole lot of classrooms. That's a whole lot of schools. That's a whole lot of students. And perhaps one of the things that we should do rather than engaging with your findings now is for you to submit to us copies of your findings so that we can invite you at some later stage or even come and discuss with you about the implications for the system as a whole. And if the research indicates exactly where those shortages are, that would even be a boost to our understanding of the current terrain. But then you see, research shouldn't be there for only research sake. What you would need to do, as much as you have these motivations that come from schools and so on, to say that we could find nobody else, and we were forced to employ XYZ simply because we have a shortage. Clearly, there must be some objective basis on which you yourself can understand the terrain, so that if your research then indicates that in a particular province there are shortages and those requests then come from those areas, then you can say and satisfy yourself and find some comfort in that. Whereas if your research is indicating that it's in a province like Gauteng, where those motivations are coming from, and you know that your research is not indicating that that's a problem, then you have some objective basis on it. So you know, you get to that point where you're working from an informed basis. But then that the provincial departments themselves should also come to the table and say, well, look, these are policies. You know, we need people who can teach properly in our classrooms, and these are the standards that we're now going to start employing as far as vacancies are concerned and skills are concerned and so on. So that you actually we move from a basis now where it's a free-for-all, really, to the point where if you want to fill a post with somebody who is not qualified, that must be of a temporary nature, and that it can't be a permanent situation, or else that person must engage in certain development before that post becomes a permanent post. I'm hearing what you're saying in terms of the evolving nature of the registration process, and that gives me a degree of comfort to know that you have those high targets and that by the end of this financial year you should have all those people registered. And if not, were you shaking your head, Mr. Chisholm? Oh, you're just scratching your nose. Oh, sorry. Because if you said no, then I would have a problem. So that we actually get to a point, you know, and we've come to an end of a phase, so to speak, as far as SACE is concerned. And you're now moving on to a new era where, in fact, your engagements with the provinces and so on should be a little more, should we say, assertive on some of these issues. Because ultimately, your mandate is to ensure a profession. Yeah?
Can I just make one, maybe a correction, because it looks like we may not have said it properly. The research for supply and demand is a huge exercise. Now, what has happened is, what I have said in my comments is that the Teacher Development Summit, which was one of the most landmark historical things that took place in this country, decided that one of the areas that they were going to research for the final National Integrated Teacher Development Plan, which must come out in March, is supply and demand. And having now gone through we are privileged in that we are seeing the interim research that has been sort of collected now. And what it is saying is that, just one example I gave you, is it is saying that we have, I think the figure they used there was 19,000 some change, immediate shortage of qualified teachers in our schools working on the maximum class sizes. So if you work on other sort of criteria, the shortage can run to about 60,000 as we speak. So it's not a question of there are 20,000 classrooms or 20,000 groups of children without teachers. There are teachers there. Which brings us to this other major complication of temporary teachers. Just yesterday we spoke to the DG of the Eastern Cape,
And he insists that those teachers must remain. He says they have served the nation, and however long it takes, it is our duty to develop these teachers. So we have to sort of factor that in. But definitely by the end of March, we will be able to take your advice and give concrete, more or less like directives to the provinces to make sure that something is done now more specifically. I think this is where you're getting to. And if it is not done, we will have a duty to bring it to the minister. So definitely, I think your point is well taken. But I just wanted to sort of put it to you that it is an indication that will come from the tedious processes. SAFE, of course, has committed itself to do its own research after that, to build up the specialist register that you are so keen on seeing as to what the mismatches are and what the specific shortages are. Thank you, ma'am.
No, we certainly look forward to hearing from you in that regard, because I really think that this is a positive development. And for me, if nothing else, if you achieve nothing else ever in your long lives, I mean, you have many, many long lives and many children and so on. But for me, this is absolutely crucial, because there is no other body, it seems to me, as concerned with the issue of developing a professional cohort of teachers in our schools than SAFE. And so that has got to be a priority for you, and certainly it seems to me that without it, everything else, including your provincial departments and so on, are working basically limping along on this very issue of teacher development, of developing a professional cohort in our schools and so on. So thank you for that, and we will certainly, Mr. Bedraj, just ask you to at some stage give us copies of, if not the full research, but certainly some of the findings,
yes,
so that we can see where you're at in this regard. Okay, can we now go on to teacher development? It seems to me that we're touching on. I have to ask permission here, because otherwise they become unruly and ask all kinds of questions and so on. Let's talk about teacher development. You know, you spoke about overlaps as far as ethics are concerned and disciplinary mechanisms and so on. But for me, as far as training is concerned, it seems to me that there's a huge overlap as well. On the one hand, you're saying to me that the department is, and maybe Mr. Trudeau can give us some sense, when you say the administration of teacher development, the funds there is going to go to SAFE, I'm not quite sure what the arrangement, I know that you were saying, well, the administration comes from the department, but then we're thinking of taking over the funds as well. And I take it this is national department. Maybe you want to just tell us what that figure is just now. But also, you know, my big worry, and I constantly raise this with, both with the DG, this DG as well as Mr. Hindle, was it seems to me that as far as teacher development is concerned, there are two issues perhaps. The first is qualification, right, which is the issue around professionalism and developing this professional cohort. But over and above that, there's this issue of curriculum development and actually delivering the curriculum in the classroom, which almost seems to be two different things in our situation. One of the constant refrains we hear from teachers would be that they either, you know, were not given sufficient training at the time that the new curriculum was introduced, and that they were, even with experienced teachers, they were not taken through this thing well enough. Now, I always use the analogy of a welder. If I run a factory that makes exhaust pipes, and I need a certain number of welders, what I would do is I would go to those institutions that train welders and say, this is what I need welders to be able to do when they come out of your institution. institution once you've trained them and once you've given them a fancy diploma and so on. They must be able to make this kind of product for me with their skills. So that the institution don't train them to build bridges and don't train them to make locomotives, but that they include in this curriculum at the very least the issue of exhausts that I require. Now, this is where I think we have fallen short, certainly as the department, as the employer body, that we have failed to set the parameters of what it is that we need delivered in our classroom to a very specific extent. Now, on the one hand, your teacher development, which has a whole range of possibilities attached to it, from character building to specific professional kind of skills that one would need, whether it's financial management or whatever it is. Right? But the issue of actually core business in this department is for me something that is absolutely crucial. And what is it that SACE particularly, and I know the unions have their own training, the departments, the various provincial departments are talking at cross purposes. When I hear the different MECs, the one MEC says to me, well, you know, we don't need formal training of our teachers. What we need is peer review. We need in-classroom kind of training, on-the-job kind of training, and so on. Now, that may very well be the case, but for me, it's the central issue of what we're training first, and then we can move on to how we do it and who is going to do it and so on and so on. But the what for me becomes quite crucial, and it seems to me that that is where the engagement certainly seems to be dissipating in terms of all of these overlaps. You guys doing training, your provincial departments have their own initiatives. You have some pilots. The unions seem to be doing something about teacher development. And nobody's actually pulling it all together in terms of the strand so that you actually have a teacher who comes into the profession and in year 5 of being a teacher, they must have reached that level of training. In year 10, that level of training. But that they enter with a sound knowledge of what they have to deliver in the classroom. Does any member want to add to this? Ms. Dudley, you had something to say earlier about teacher development.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I'll have to take that call. What I want to say obviously links outside of this, but where the first bullet came up was to promote and enhance the image of the profession. Now, obviously, generally, that's an important thing, but why it stuck out for me on the how was because for me it just seems so important that we enhance the image of a profession largely because we want to attract the best learners to the profession. And that's the one area that I think that we've really, where we dug a hole for ourselves, is that the very learners that teachers are teaching are the ones who say they wouldn't ever go into teaching. So it's very important in that area. And then as we moved on, we spoke about, for example, the Teachers' Day celebration, and it occurred to me those sort of things often take place outside of the school, and teachers are again pulled away from those very learners. And so my thoughts were, have we thought about utilizing those kind of things to make the celebration and honoring of teachers happen actually within the school where the teachers are for the purpose of the learners being the main audience and target and whatever, and even involving them to the degree of them having a poll as to who the best teacher is or that. Or so it's just to keep those celebrations in schools rather than pulling teachers out of schools where they're not actually touching their target audience. So.
Actually, that would be a wonderful way to celebrate World Teachers Day, for example, is to talk to students in schools about what it means to be a teacher. Talk about, you know, the history of teaching and how some of the greatest minds ever, who ever lived, were actually teachers.
Okay, and if I
interested as to why SAISA is selling the files. I don't know whether it's the PDP files or the CTDP files to educators, because that is your sole mandate. The thing that you need to do to educators is to develop them. So now why do you have them buying those files for them to be developed? Thank you.
I think, like Siti said, the answer is the simpler ones, and she will deal with the rest. I think, ideally, Chair, we are correct in here that World Teachers Day, if it could be celebrated at the level of the school, that's where it would make a serious impact. That is why, as a council, what we do almost annually, we send out posters to schools advising them on different methods they could utilize at schools in terms of celebrating World Teachers Day. We are not for the idea that for World Teachers Day to be celebrated, it needs to be taken out of the school. But it's the teachers that the school community must celebrate, actually. And if you take them out altogether, then you're depriving the school community the opportunity. And I think that would achieve, actually, motivating our kids, more especially at high schools, to understand what teachers are, what critical role they are playing in society, and to motivate them to take up teaching as a career. We know as things that there are other factors that we may not be in a position to deal with, but making this profession as attractive as possible through communicating with our members of society, that is exactly our agenda. I think that we would be able to deal with CPTD in particular, and the other matters of the files sold and not of it.
Thanks, Chair. I think what is critical around us, why we're selling the files, I think one of the important things that we are pushing on educators to have the PDP files, when we go around is to say they need to take responsibility of the fact that it is their files that they must buy, they must keep, because they must keep an update of the development they do professionally. Now, we have files where schools and educators cannot afford, where we remake copies of that, but I think it becomes important that they own up to the system. Because currently, when you just provide, educators don't take the responsibility. But the interest is that we've realized more and more educators, with the CPTD system coming up, they are buying the files, they're starting to fill in the files, they're starting to commit to saying, it is my file, I need to ensure that every professional development I've gone through is put up in a file. Because when you give it to the school, they take it as something that the school must manage and the school must do. And we try to bring back, it's their own professional development that teachers got to be responsible for. So one of the reasons we say, we're selling them only for 69 so that teachers can take that responsibility. That because in one school here in Western Cape, for example, last week, they were saying, why should we buy it? The school should buy it. And we're saying the professional development is not for the school, but for the individual educator. So by buying that, it gives you the sense of responsibility that it is your responsibility. You have to make sure that you are being developed to the extent that you want to be developed, and you keep a record of that development, because educators don't currently do the keeping of those records.
Let me take the other one, Siti, while you think about an addition, because what worries me is the very, very big question that the Chair puts. Chair, I'm sorry, but I want to labor this point a bit about the Teacher Development Summit. Now, that summit was actually put together, I think it cost 5 million rand from the ELRC and the ETDP CETA, to address those very questions that you are asking. And SAISA has been very passionate and participating in this thing. You know, the question of teacher development, you get curriculum development, you get skills development, you get the money of the 1% of going only for ETDP, CETA, and HEQC exempted ones. So what does SAISA do? So you find that this question of developing a national integrated teacher plan, which hopefully comes out now, in next month, will begin to clarify that area, which is very messy. I just took out a book from my bag to show you. This is the kind of research that preceded the summit. We were very clear, all the stakeholders, that there mustn't be some new invention of the wheel. This country has got enough research. So there has been a whole lot of research that went. There was also a round table to that summit. It's quite a thick book. Then the summit itself produced another think book, which should be out one of these days. Then there were four working groups, There is an advisory committee, and there is the steering committee, which the DG chairs, that are now trying to bring in the four themes together into this plan that begins to clarify her. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask the office, Nobisa, to give you at least each of these documents, and you would see that there is some unraveling taking place now. Because really, like ourselves have said, there's no money to be tapped, that we can say should be used for professional development to get CPTD points, because the present arrangement doesn't allow it. Yet there is a lot of money there that the government has put aside for teacher development. It's almost 1 billion rand, that 1% that comes to. So it's like not managed properly. Provinces, I'm told, like yesterday we heard, that half of that money goes to the Premier's office. Just goes away. Nobody knows why, but it goes, and nobody asks. Which is supposed to be for teacher development. Now, I think these are things that have to be corrected. There is money there for teacher development. I don't think anybody in the right mind should ask the government for more money for teacher development. It's just a question of making sure that money is managed properly for the priority areas that you are kind of putting your finger on. Sorry, Sidi, I don't know. I think you wanted to add something on.
Well, maybe before you even come in there, Mr. Trudeau, you want to just give us some sense of what Mr. Bedraj is now talking about around teacher development. Are we talking about funds that have basically been ring-fenced for teacher development that hasn't been used, and in provinces you have this tendency of it not being spent? Maybe give us a bit of a report from your side, just in terms of monetary allocation. Firstly, you guys have a budget at national. What exactly is that being used for, and who's actioning that, right? That's the one thing. In terms of the other stakeholders, your provinces in particular, where is teacher development funding in each of the provinces, and who's actioning that, and how many people are targeted, so to speak, right? If you were to just go back, let's say, for the last 2 years, so that we can see what the pattern is of spend there and where the emphasis on teacher development is. And I seem to recall in this teacher development summit that the unions themselves had tabled huge amounts of money that they were referring for teacher development there. And if you maybe had access to that, if you could incorporate it into your report. I know that a lot was being spent on HIV, AIDS awareness campaigns and stuff like that as well, which was broadly termed teacher development, really. I would be very keen if we have a consolidated report just for the finances of the whole thing, and then I'll be very pleased to receive this package from Mr. Bedraj. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Just quickly, Chair, just to say on the pilot that we're doing for the CPTD, we're not only going to be doing, but we're taking into consideration the district officials, because one major thing that we've been looking at is to say teachers are not getting the support they need from district officials. So when we do the pilot now, we'll also be piloting to ensure we're piloting 9,144 schools and 45 districts, because we want to ensure whilst we are developing educators, we give them enough support, because your district officials go through the first door they knock on when they get support. So we'll be looking onto that one. But could we also say,
can I just then say on this issue, because you see, we get told when we go out on oversight and so on, and when we meet these district officials as well, I'm told that many of them were never teachers and were never haven't got the experience of a classroom behind them. Now, I'm not sure if that is true or whether that just pertains in that particular area that we visited, and that can't be true for the whole country or whatever it is. So in those pilots that you do have a footprint in or whatever, if you would be so kind as to give us your impression on this issue, this very important issue, because if we're talking about support, I wouldn't, you know, Ms. Gina has been a principal of a school. If she is in a school and needs support from a district, you can't have somebody with less than 5 years teaching experience coming to support somebody like her. It's just not on. So, and again, we lack the empirical data really to substantiate some of these claims. And of course, there may be it may just be incorrect and may just be perceptions, because you know when one such incident is recorded, then suddenly it becomes a generalized thing. So just, it would be very nice to hear from you in those pilots what your findings are as well, eh?
Well, Dr. Chen. The other thing that you have that you wanted to check is around the curriculum development versus qualification of educators. I think one of the critical things CPDD wants to look at is the impact of development of educators to the learning area or subject they're teaching in the classroom. Because what we've understood when we're looking at teachers professionally and looking at their qualifications, with the changes in the curriculum, they don't keep up to date. We were actually, look now, we're sitting in a committee where we're doing the ministerial project committee that looks at the recommendations of the ministerial team. Teachers were trained to teach geography. And when they get to schools, now it's HSS, which is a combination of two subjects. And you get a teacher who's teaching being strong in one of those combinations. So we're trying to look at how do we ensure that teachers who are teaching technology, who have never trained for technology, is given the particular support to ensure that they go to the classroom understanding the learning area they're supposed to teach, despite the qualifications that they might be having. Because currently, in the vista that we have educators who were trained for a particular natural science only. They have to teach natural science, which does not have all the elements they were taught when they were doing their pure science at the BSc. So CPDD is then to bring back to say, we're looking at the curriculum, we're looking at the learning area, you have developed where you have a shortcoming in what you are to deliver in the classroom.
Your general perception says that it is in those subjects that are sort of completely have been revamped. That you're having this kind of problem, or is it, because you see, my sense, it's the first time I've heard this particular explanation, and then it makes sense to me, just rationally, that people would struggle because these are new things that have been incorporated into the curriculum, right? But my sense has been that there's been a general tardiness around the curriculum across the board, as opposed to the specific issues that you've raised with technology and maybe even science and so on. What are your impressions just with regard to your membership and their needs and so on? Where, as far as curriculum is concerned and curriculum content, would you find that there would be a problem?
Can I just say, Chair, with the advantage that as we sit in the different committees of the minister has set up, we've picked up that it's not only take the ministerial committee that was looking at the review of the implementation of the curriculum. One of the recommendations that came out was that it's generally in all the subjects. Hence, this year, the MPC that is sitting is looking at refining all the subjects, all the learning areas in the GET band and all the subjects in the FET band, because we found that teachers seem to have issues with all the different ones. So the team that's sitting and that's where SAIS is drawing their support from is to say that every educator seems to have a gap, because if it's not the curriculum itself, then the CAS assessment, the assessment part of it seems to be giving us a problem. So you cannot say it's just a particular learning area. The ones that I cited are the ones that were combined, and we have one educator teaching a component of three subjects. But with take teaching of English, for example, the assessment that needs to be done on English as the first language, let alone as the first additional, the second additional language, is a topical, complicated issue that does not talk to all the elements. So this is what we are looking at, which is in combination with what the department is currently doing as well in streamlining the NCS.
And if you envisage this process, I know that the department has given us a deadline by the end of March, I think it was, in terms of the actual review that they were doing. Has this now been extended? What is your understanding of it?
Fortunately, Chair, sitting on the MPC, the Minister has developed the review has finished, the recommendation has been accepted, and there's a committee called the Ministerial Project Committee, which has started its work, I think we started about a month ago. We have a deadline of August 2011, where we are looking at writers who will look at the different subjects and ensure that they are there, and then collecting the information. So the MPC has started, and as I say, the deadline is 2011, so that remember that the recommendations from the ministerial committee were short term and long term and future. So the short term ones, the minister needs to say she wants to implement come 2011. So those are where the current work is being done on. So it's going up to August 2011 with the MPC.
Just to add on to what Mr. Brizal has said about the full working committees of the TV Advisory Committee and the Steering Committee, I'm involved in both of them. And as an education, it's very heartening to hear the sincerity of the questions that has been asked here. And I can sense a hunger for information. And I would like to confirm what Mr. Brizal has said. If the findings of those four, or the ultimate end work of those committees are being known, then I think a lot of these questions will be answered as well. Not referring them to somebody else, but a lot of the questions now is not really the work of SACE, but we are involved in that. In those committees, the employers, the unions, and the other employers are all involved in those committees. So, I'm sure that the end result of the work there will give you a lot of clarity to the questions that have been asked, and also the research that has been done, and the results of that.
Very heartening for me to know that people like yourself is there, because you know, obviously there seems to be, certainly amongst the teaching profession, there seems to be this notion that people who take these decisions do so on and for us. And that we ourselves are not involved in this because we are practitioners and so on. So it's very important, I think, that the practitioners such as yourselves are there, and that actually this must become known. I think part of the problem has been that the work of the committee has kind of taken place at a certain level where you have to make recommendations to the minister and so on. And actually, what should be emanating from the work of the committee is a kind of a release from time to time as to your findings and where you're going and the direction. And so that teachers are not left, you know, we've got this announcement that there's a review.
Yeah.
And then it stops at that level. And then there's constant confusion. And in fact, if the department comes here today, you'll see most of my members will be asking, where is this process? There's confusion on the ground. You know, people haven't been told and so on. And yet we said short-term, medium-term and so on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it becomes a problem when you do that kind of thing. So that even if there are improvements, the perception is still that, look, it's other people who don't know anything about the classroom who've done these things and, you know, you're going to have to get a huge buy-in. So it's very important, I think, that perhaps you guys as professional bodies, both in your capacity as SACE support member as well as representing the unions, that you start disseminating some of, not everything, of course, but those things where firm decisions have been taken, such as timelines, such as when people can expect notification and so on. I saw somebody else's hand. Was it yours, Mr. Susan?
Myself,
and
Jefferson, when I'm listening to the teacher development or professional development, as the presenter was saying, I'm tempted to ask a question because she talked about the curriculum development of educators. Now, the department is having a program of developing educators. And SACE also is talking about the development of educators. Now the question is, does SACE requesting a mandate of taking over this process to assist the department, or SACE is proposing to work hand in glove with the department to execute this process? That's the question.
Good question, actually. Let's hear the story.
Let me start. Sorry, I'm sitting on the wrong side. Yes. I think, Chair, what becomes important, and I think this is something that the Council has really discussed, that when it comes to teacher development, in fact, when we were given CPD as ensure that development is happening. Hence, our role will be managing the development of educators, while the department itself will be ensuring that development is happening. Hence, when you look at the criteria of what we're looking at when we're piloting, we're looking at the capacity of providers in each and every province. Whether it's teachers going to get training through the department, through the unions, through NGOs and everybody else. But we as states then will be managing, because we have the database of each and every provider in the province that does the things. And each and every provider will have programs endorsed by SAFE to ensure that what they will be providing for educators is relevant to what the educator needs in the classroom. So that's our main thing. So the department will still be...
In terms of the what is being trained, not by who and so on and so on, the what, is that, and I think that goes to the essence of Mr. Skosana's question here, is do you engage with what is perceived as the need in the classroom as a first priority, rather than perhaps the other things that... perhaps the unions are busy doing, and so on and so on. That's really the essence of whether the department is, and it's not so much the providers or the service providers that actually run the training, because, you know, that's a separate issue. I've always said that one of the things that you need to answer first and foremost is what do you train? And then we can look at who you train, how you train, and so on and so on. So really that's the issue, is who decides what needs to be dealt with in terms of teacher delivery.
Maybe, Chair, let's go back quickly to say who decides. When we get to this issue that says teachers need to identify their shortcomings in education, it gives you the first step of who decides on who needs particular training. Well, this will be on your form. As says, our role is then to say, when we look at what teachers think they need training, the providers, because what the department does most of the time, it outsources the training to different things. Our role will be to endorse. So we'll be looking at what is to be offered and agree with whoever, being the department, to say, what you are offering is what we've identified and seen in the five of educators to say they need that particular training. Because teachers themselves need to identify what is it that they need to be trained in. And then when we endorse those particular programs, it will be talking to, because currently, what teachers are needing and what teachers are getting are not talking to each other.
But can I ask you this, really? You see, if you ask me, and I'm a lawyer, let's say, right? If you tell me, what kind of training would you require? I'll say, well, I don't know how to belly dance. I would like to do first aid and maybe some skydiving. You know, that would be fun. You know, my last consideration would be improving my legal skills. And while I completely agree that people should buy into the process and people, you know, you can't impose certain things on people and so on, I don't think that that is the basis on which you derive the answer to the what should be trained, particularly if we all agree that we have a huge crisis in our schools, you know, in terms of delivering the curriculum. So the department, for me, and I say this openly, they've abdicated their responsibility, and it's up to you guys to bring people into this fold to have a collaborative effort. Because if you don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. When it came to the new curriculum, you know what happened, more than any of us here, that what this was, it was a new curriculum. They left it to higher education to do the training. What happened? Higher education can't even agree what OBE stands for, let alone anything else. So how on earth do they train teachers for 2 days and 3 days and even a week on the new curriculum? The people who understand the classroom are the people who practice in the classroom. So they are the ones that could tell you what they need, yes, but the department sees the results of what we're getting. And they should come and say, we've identified qualified geography teacher. It's going to take me about 4 years of failure before I realize, oh my God, maybe I should get some training in geography or whatever. You know? So it's really, I mean, for me, it's just absolutely critical that people, the different role players, are brought together first and foremost to talk to the issue of what teacher development is going to take place. And then we can move on to who provides it, how you provide it, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's 2 weeks training outside, and then you can negotiate. But the what is absolutely central.
Yeah, you put your finger on it, and I think Mr. Polo was going to continue. That's one dimension. There are three dimensions. One is it has been a selling point that we want to take teachers to the level of consciousness where they become true professionals in every sense of the word, you know, where they decide for themselves, as doctors would, as to what is good for them and what they need to do. But it's a long way. You're right. One, there are three dimensions. One is we would be guided by teacher-identified needs, definitely. Of course, within reason. The other is schools. There's three kinds of professional development that we have identified. The other is the school's needs, school's management. They decide what the school needs, and they will call, and we will allocate points. The trickier is the points. The points are the ones that will attract providers, or dissuade providers. Now, of course, the profession's needs, which we will discuss with the department and other employers in terms of what are the, like, for example, corporal punishment, you know, is a professional need. Nobody knows how, or very few teachers know how to administer other kinds of disciplinary measures. And for us, it's a kind of a national need, and we will be targeting that as one of the profession's priorities, dealing with how to get children to listen to you, to get unruly children to begin to get interested in the lessons. So there are three big dimensions, and we have also sort of structured some numbers around that. You know, teachers must engage in all three kinds of activities. They cannot just say, no, I want to do belly dancing and I want to do fishing and get the points and get away with that. In fact, belly dancing wouldn't get any points for those teachers. Thank you, sir.
We'd like you guys to think a little bit more about this, and tell us, you know, how it is that you hope to pull these things together. Because I see, you know, from where I sit, and I have a kind of a high-level view of what you guys have a great deal of expertise in each of your cases, and you have the detail of what we see. But members will tell you here that if you say to them, what if there was one challenge that you could address, what would that be? And they'll say to you, it's delivering the curriculum in the classroom in an effective way. That's what we will say to you. Now, if that is not happening in our schools and our development initiatives are somewhere else, then there seems to me to be a serious problem. So it's really up to you guys, it seems to me. You're the cog in the wheel to bring this stuff together, and the department, because the department has abdicated, and it doesn't see itself as central, and when I say the department, I certainly am talking about the national department, and maybe part of it is the distance between the national department, really, and the actual implementation at the level of schools. Maybe that's one of the reasons, and that they see provinces as needing to come in there and so on. But again, you go from province to province. And if you start by just engaging the MECs, you will already see the problem. You know why? Because you're going to get different views on what their needs are. And that's the problem, that there isn't this central adherence to what is core function. And if we get to that point where there's synergy with everybody to say, this is what we need our teachers to be able to do when they're in the classroom, forget everything else, then I think we're on a winning ticket. Okay? I saw Mr. Do you want to just add before I let me speak?
So, Chair, I think, Chair, with the permission of my CEO and CFO, what we need to propose to the committee is a sort of a workshop, because what the committee members and you, Chair, are saying, I think what is unfair from our our side. We are bringing just a bit of where we are without providing the entire background due to time. Maybe we need to have the entire strategy that why CPDD, where did we come from, and what are the things that we've pulled together that led to where we are with the pilot. Maybe we need to have that so that we can give an entire background, and that in that process also gather more information that needs to, because it will be part of the pilot. Because why we have a pilot to ensure that by the time we say to the minister, you can implement, we'll be saying everyone who is in education is ready and is accepting. So I think we need to have that proposal to say we need to have a date maybe where we can come to Parliament and make a whole day presentation of the entire process that led to where we are with CPDD right now.
I think that's a very good idea, and I would be very grateful if you can do some of the legwork and then come to us with a proposal of a program, for example, and then we'll also give you a sense of what it is that we think is needed, so that we actually tackle this landscape, and if needs be, we involve other role players as well.
After the March, the integrated plan, because I think we may even be critical of that plan and want to share with you where that plan could be strengthened. So, Siri, if we could find a date, maybe early April or something. Thank you, Mike.
That would be perfectly fine. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, that is fine. Now I understand what we're discussing now. But what I will recommend to say is that when they go back to prepare that document which we are going to discuss in the workshop, they must take into consideration the streams of subjects or learning areas that they offer to educators if they engage on a long term. And also in the short term, they must stay whether it's short term or long term. Long term, I mean to certificate those educators who are attending those particular courses. Maybe it takes a year or 2 years or whatever. They must be clear on that.
So what you're saying is that we're looking at qualifications,
yes,
and then saying
and accreditation
other,
for
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And number two, I should think they must communicate thoroughly with the Department of Education, get more information about these educators, because there are skills audits that have been submitted by the various educators in various provinces to the department. They can get clearly what is needed from our part as department. And I should think, Chairperson, if we can take it along those lines, then we'll be knowing of what we're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just on the subject of the what that I was thinking at the moment, I have a situation where professionals have put together certain curriculums for like life skills on finding it difficult to actually know what to do with it. And the thing there is that people have identified that it's not just the maths and the science and those sort of things, but it's the whole idea that we have a whole generation of people who don't understand the potential of their brains, or even how to read, or how to sit an exam, or all that whole, and of course teachers don't seem to be au fait with that either. Half of them probably just assume everybody knows these things, and the other half haven't really considered the incredible potential. So there's sort of a whole area that has to do with the how to study, and the how to this, and the whatever, and just grasping that there's so much potential in terms of, and just understanding the workings of the brain and things like that. So there's like a whole first step almost that we don't ever go anywhere near in teaching, and then we give all that information, but nobody's yet learned how to process or deal with that information. So I'm just wondering if there isn't a need for somebody to be looking at what is out there curriculum-wise, or that could feed into the life skills to actually provide that little step for people.
I imagine that's what, you know, when you enter a higher education institution, that a part of the curriculum as a teacher should be a lot of that kind of stuff. Is how do people learn? You know, what are the different ways in which people learn? And as you say, there's a whole underlying kind of philosophy around learning and teaching and so on. That, well, you know, and the question is how does one do that, and whether in fact the way we do it is effective, and so on. I was introduced to a very interesting system in another school. You were talking about capital punishment, Mr. Bedrad, where they work on a 10-point system. They work on a system where nine times in a week a child has to receive praise for something. And it's only once in that week that you can find fault with the child. And what that is meant to do is to obviously build the child's confidence and so on, and the sense of self-worth. And it seems to me, actually, that, and this is a school that deals with very troubled children, children who have learning difficulties and so on, and some of whom have to take medication, you know, some of whom are autistic and so on. And they work with this system. And I just think to myself, you know, I can't understand. And to this day, I sit here, I can't understand the issues that are being raised as challenges to me. Maybe because I'm not a teacher, and maybe because I don't understand what happens in the classroom and the dynamics there. Because it takes a lot out of you, I would imagine, to go from one class to another or stay in a class for 7 hours a day and try and do your best constantly. That must be quite a difficult thing to just keep giving of yourself. So there has to be part of this program, something that looks at putting back to a teacher, you know, so that there's space in a day where you can just recharge, read a magazine, and go to your next class or something of that sort, which is what they do in the school, just in terms of managing people's stresses. Because all of us have stresses that are, you know, that come from home and so on and so on. So all of those things are part of what we call teacher development. But for me, that would be very central to what happens in the classroom and what should happen in the classroom. And very central to all of that is the individual who is the teacher. I've often said that if you have a teacher who is competent, and not just in terms of absolute knowledge of the curriculum, but is able to teach and is, you know, some people just teach. They natural born teachers. And some people have to learn to teach. And for me, it's a big calling, you know, that you would want to teach as opposed to coming into the classroom and sitting down and say, well, read your textbooks kind of thing. And you don't have much of anything else in terms of resources. You're going to get a good outcome. So much depends on this individual. And remember, a classroom is a very intimate space. It's also a very closed space. So, you know, we talk about the kind of abuse that happens. And so there are very subtle levels of abuse that can happen there as well that the teachers may not even be aware of, and I don't think many people are. I was sitting with a bunch of people. We were just reminiscing about our own school careers. And you can't imagine how, as adults, we were so influenced by these teachers that either in a positive or negative way, you know, that they actually carved who you were, probably second only to your parents. Mr. Groen, about you?
Thank you. I think you sketch the ideal education system for us now, but in the reality, when you are getting into classes, we've had these big classes, and the teacher can't really get to individuals in a half an hour or a three-quarter an hour's time. And then they move out, and the next 50 to 60 people in the next class. So it is very difficult to have that interaction from person to from people to teacher. So it's quite difficult. But what I think we must do, and I think the minister also mentioned it stadium is the reopening of the old colleges. That is very practical, and we've got so many skilled teachers in South Africa that we can use as lecturers in that colleges to train our young teachers from start. That's a long process, and we must, I think we lost a lot of skills in the past few years. In education as well, in how to manage bigger classes and that thing, because in the past we haven't got it, and that is a lot of challenges is lying ahead. of us in the system. And we must look in another. I think size can play a very big role in this whole situation to get, we want, and you said it, we want the best people out of schools to go into education for teachers. And that is the only way we can resolve the problem we've had now at this stage in education.
I think that goes to what again? That the challenges are particularly unique to our time and to our circumstances as well. But let's, on that note, let me ask just one more question, and this is really just clarity. Dr. Bredis, to you, you're saying that on the teacher's fee, the increase to 6 rand, you said that you're now beginning to speak to the union.
Thank you.
membership fee. The registration is a once-off. So the 60 Rand, I'm not too worried about. I think it's a bit steep, but I'm not too worried about that. And particularly if they're going to have good paper and all kinds of security systems attached onto the certificate, that seems to me to be reasonable. The issue is the membership fee, huh? Which has to be paid on a monthly or annual basis? Monthly basis. You. Okay. We'll get a report from you. How long will that take? Okay. You say a week? 2 weeks? 2 weeks it is, Mr. Brown. Thank you very much. Members, Ms. Dudley, you were not here earlier. You know, that workshop that we spoke about, we've got some dates. We just need to ascertain your availability. Please, before you leave, speak to Mr. Brown, because I need to get some indication fairly soon about how many members are actually going to be present, because that, of course, affects the budget that we're going to apply for. It will be at the end of the session. I think the dates are 25 to 27. The 25th is a Thursday afternoon. We'll be leaving on Thursday afternoon after the caucuses, the party caucuses, and we'll be staying at the workshop till Saturday afternoon. Yeah, at the end of the term. The last few days of the term, right? So that will be the Thursday. We'll close that Thursday evening, basically. Parliament will rise. So Thursday afternoon, after your party caucuses, we'll be leaving to the venue. We then have the workshop on Friday until Saturday afternoon. Okay? Please indicate your availability as soon as possible to Mr. Brown. Thank you very much. Anything further? Thank you very much to all of you members and Mr. Kroeneveld for standing in. And please know that you're welcome at any stage to participate in our meeting. Thank you very much, Mr. Bedraj, and your team once again for a very interesting discussion and debate. And as much as we always tend to be robust in our engagement, please know that as far as faith is concerned, a lot is riding on your own success. And we believe that you're quite pivotal to the success or otherwise of the education system. So best of wishes to you. Best of luck with all that you do, and we await to hear from you further on the proposal.
Thank you very much, Chair, from our side and to the members of the House for the guidance and the support and the understanding. And we do take your concerns seriously about, I was going to say that you are more of a teacher than most of us, but I see towards the end of the meeting you put your lawyer's cap on. So I see you're still very much a lawyer. So we will give you the explanations, and we are assured that there will really be no problems with the 15 rand. And we also would plead with members of the committee to assist us along the way to make sure that that does not get sort of derailed, because of all of the things that we want to do, at the end of the day, everything boils down to money. None of it. So thank you very much, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you.